Thanks, Jeff, and thanks for inviting me to give this talk at this conference. And this is, so I'm going to talk to you about dense granular suspension. This is something that we started probably more than 10 years ago with Olivier Pouliquen in Marseille. And I will go from sphere to fiber, and on fiber, I've been collaborating with Jeff Butler and his group since a long time, and the work is done with Franco Tapia, postdoc with us, and Seth Sheikh, who got a twin degree between Marseille and University of Florida. So I start to talk about really dense granular suspension, and I want to give you some example first. And we start with, unfortunately, this kind of debris and avalanche flow, and well, somebody mentioned the disaster that happened just south of Santa Barbara. And I took the train yesterday and I've seen some mud. It's terrible. And there is also lava flow. And I learned that lava, actually, they are burying bubble, but also crystallite, which can grow because and they can be also of different shape, because I will talk about fiber. And in terms of engineering, where you can find this material, I'll just give you two examples, but you can find them in any place. You can find in pulp and paper industry, of course, yeah, especially fibers. And another thing I wanted to advertise is this museum in Marseille, where actually the building, you can see, is a very delicate building. It's made of concrete, which has been reinforced with fiber, and I just wanted to give a little glimpse of things like that. Now, I will give a little because introduction of suspension rheology very quickly, and then I will really talk about the work we've done with Olivier, which is to give an alternative frictional approach, and then we'll move to fiber at the end. So, I will start with the suspension seen as a single effective fluid. And I start with something which is the simplest possible, a viscous suspension of non-colloidal particle spheres. They are neutrally buoyant. I'm going to shear them. So there is, they are the same density as a fluid, so there is no buoyancy effect. The Reynolds number of the particle is zero, so it's completely viscous. There's no Brownian motion. So basically, I will have hydrodynamic and contact, that's all. So if you look at the suspension viscosity, and if you look just at dimensional analysis, you'll find that actually the scaling of the shear stress is viscous. And it's the shear stress of the suspension is scaling with the shear rate. This is the viscosity of the fluid, the suspending fluid, and you just have a function here, which is a relative viscosity, which is only a function of the volume fraction. And actually, as you know from Einstein, as soon as you put one particle in a fluid, it's dissipating more, and you have an increase of viscosity, which is shown here. It can increase pretty high. And why is that? Why it's dissipating? It's because the sphere can rotate in the rotational portion of the shear, but it resists the elongation because it's rigid. That's why you have dissipation. So that's a famous result of Einstein, which gives you the order phi being the volume fraction correction. You can find the first effect of practical interaction with the work of Batchelor, but you see it took nearly 70 years to get that. It took some long time. It's very complicated. You have this empirical correlation that I give you here, and you see that it's at some point it's going to stop, and it's diverging at a critical volume fraction, which is given here. And but if you want really to see what's going on when it's jamming, you really need to look at the steric and the elastic interaction, and I think Mathieu will probably talk about that in the next talk. What I want to show you is I made a collection, a little bit of some data. This is relative viscosity versus volume fraction, and in color you can see a collection from many, many experiments, different experiments. It can be regular rheometer, it can be regular rheometer using NMR imaging. And it can be also an inclined plane rheometer. And I have also put the work we've done with pressure and pose rheometers. So what you can see is that the relative viscosity increase with concentration and diverge at a critical volume fraction, which is in fact smaller than the close packing of typically 0.64. And it's about 0.154 to 0.62, let's say. And what this indicated, that it's frictional sphere. And this is, in black here, you have result on numerical simulation. You can see that when there is no friction, which is here, you diverge at 0.64. But when there is friction, okay, you diverge as a smaller critical volume fraction, which will vary on the size distribution and, of course, the surface interaction. You can collapse everything by using this phi c critical volume fraction, and you can collapse nearly all the data. You see the divergence is going like minus 2. Okay? I will come back on that. Now, you'll see, oh, well, this is like a Newtonian fluid, except that the viscosity is varying with volume fraction, but not completely, because there is normal stress differences. And they are defined like that. Actually, the pressure is given by the flow, and you have, because it's incompressible, you have normal stress differences. On a regular thread, the normal stress are isotropic. Here, it's not anymore. And one is the direction of the flow, two is the direction of the gradient, three is the vorticity, and you can see that you can define these two normal stress differences. They also scale linearly with the shear rate, because everything is linear, okay? And what we find is that N2 is very large, much larger than N1, and it is actually negative. And I will talk about the sign of N1. So just, again, I've made a collection of everything I could find, really. And you see that this is the coefficient alpha1 and alpha2, which is just the normal stress differences normalized by the shear stress. And you can see that N2 is negative. It's very strongly negative. An increase with volume fraction, okay? N1. So again, this is the experiment in color, numerical simulation in black. And what you can see is that when you had a little bit of friction, it's much better. This is without friction, and this is with friction. Okay. And if you think about N1, you see that the sign is a little bit elusive, because some people find, well, I think most of the world is finding that it's slightly negative, except in Nice. I like my friend in Nice, where they find it's positive. And actually what's going on is that if you look at the numerical simulation of Stanley Gallier here, the people from Nice, they find that when you have confinement, you can see that the sign can change. And very quickly, if I can just explain what it is that why N2 is big and negative, is that all the action is in the plane of shear. So in the vorticity direction, there is nothing. So basically, you have contact, and it's sigma 2, which is doing all the action. Why and what is going on with N1? If you think N1 is sigma 1 minus sigma 2, so if there is fairly equally contact in the one direction and in the two direction, well, it should be zero. But if you have a little bit deficit of hydrodynamic, like you will have a tail behind the particle of contact due to hydrodynamic, you have something which is slightly negative. And now, if you have some alignment near a wall and due to confinement, you will have a little bit of something which is positive. So basically, it's contact which matter, except that for the N1. There is the hydrodynamic and the structure is giving you the sign. Now, I want to move a little bit and tell you about what two-phase flow of suspension, and in particular the concept of particle pressure. And we can see the suspension in a single fluid, but actually there is some time you cannot, because if you have this thing flow in a pipe, actually the particle will move at a different velocity than the fluid. There will be a slip, and you will see this migration here going on toward of the particle towards the center of the channel. Same thing if you think about erosion or the flow along an avalanche like that, something like that. You will see that there will be slip between the particle and the fluid. And actually, I mentioned before, the suspension mixture is incompressible, but not the particle phase. Actually, the particle phase, the particle can move and can expand or contract. They can do that. And actually, there is an analogy. There is this concept of particle pressure, which is very important, or more generally, normal stress, particle normal stress, which is analogous to the osmotic pressure. And there's this nice experiment, by the people in FAST and Jeff, who have shown that it's exactly like in an osmotic pressure, like if you have a U-tube with here a membrane where the fluid can go through but not the particle, you can see that you have an osmotic pressure because the particle, they want to expand. And actually, you measure that with the pore pressure. Same thing in a quiet rheometer when you shear, and you can see that there is the pore pressure, which is an evidence of the particle pressure. This particle pressure is difficult to capture, and it's crucial for the two-phase flow modeling. And I will give you a little glimpse of how to do that by talking about shear-induced migration. I mentioned that if you have a pipe flow of a dense suspension, actually the particle will migrate towards the center of the pipe. And this has been known since a while, and there's some numerical simulation that there's this famous paper by Knott and Brady using the well-known Stuckism dynamic. We show that starting with something which is where the particles are randomly distributed, they migrate toward the center of the pipe. If you want to model that, and that's why I introduced this particle pressure, is that actually, if you do a two-phase modeling, you'll find that the particle flux, this migration flux, is related to the divergence of the particle phase normal stress that I just introduced. So you can see that this force is really, which migration force is driven by this. And of course, you need some correlation to measure that. And just to give you how the physics which is behind, let's say we have in 2D, a steady, fully developed flow in the flow direction, which is one. If you write the particle momentum balance in the y direction, you can see that you can just write that the pressure here, the divergence or the differentials in the normal stress is zero. And since the pressure, we can define it as a normal viscosity linear with a shear rate, linear with the shear rate. We can define it like that. You can see that since the shear rate is varying, which is very large near the wall and zero in the middle of the pipe, that means that this term here should vary. That means that the volume fraction should vary. So when the shear rate is low, the concentration is high, and vice versa. Just to give you a little idea of what you can do, we did this experiment in a pipe using match index density and match index particle. The fluid is have a little bit of rhodamine. If you put a laser sheet, you can see the particle. This is in the beginning of the experiment, and at the end you have you see the particle has migrated. And you can compare that to the suspension balance model and some using some correlation for the normal stress, particle normal stress, and it's working pretty well. There is some problem a little bit here when there is a smaller bulk volume fraction, but really, qualitatively, this is working very well. So now, I will move. I gave you, a little overview of a classical view of suspension, defining that you can see a suspension as an effective fluid, but you can see also as a two-phase flow. And I think I introduced this concept of the particle pressure or normal stress, particle normal stress, which is very important. Now, I will show you that there is also an alternative way of seeing things, because up to now, we have seen that most of the usual experiment that people are doing using rheometer, it's using a volume impose rheometry. You put in a quiet flow or in between two plates like that. Okay, so you impose a certain volume fraction, you impose a shear, and you measure the shear stress and the shear stress. And actually, your rheology, is given by two functions, which is the shear viscosity, the relative shear viscosity, and also the relative normal viscosity that I just introduced using this thing, the particle pressure. But there is another way of seeing things, which is pressure imposed rheometer. It's coming from the granular community, and the idea is to say, now if you impose a pressure, the particle pressure, instead of measuring it, and you leave the volume fraction to expand or contract, and you need to have opening here so the fluid can go in or out, you have actually two rheological low, which are here the effective friction or the volume fraction, and then depend only on the viscous dimension and shear rate, which is given here. So this is another way of seeing things, okay? Instead of confining your suspension, you can just, you press on the particle phase and you let the fluid go in and out. So this is the rheometer that we built with Olivier Pouliquen, which is in Marseille. And actually, this is the thing. It's okay. So here, it's an annual cell, like that. And here, the important thing is that the top porous plate enable fluid to go through it, but not the particle. That means that if you shear very slowly, okay, the fluid will go out. But if you shear very fast to flow, the fluid will go in. So actually, the volume fraction adjusts. And well, of course, we can measure the shear stress, we can control the shear rate, and we can measure also, because we impose the pressure, we can measure the particle pressure, which is in fact here, it's minus sigma 2.2 here. So, and the important thing is we can examine the rheology very, very close to the jamming transition where it stopped to flow. Because if we go very slowly, we can approach the volume fraction very, very, very close. Okay, so this is typically the kind of result you can get. This is the effective friction coefficient versus this viscous number with dimensionless shear, right? You can see that. So I have reported some experiment we did and also some simulation from Stadinger and also other correlation. And here it's, so it's increased with the viscous number. The volume fraction decreases with the viscous number. The important thing is that you can see that we can approach very close the jamming transition here. And at jamming, we found a friction coefficient critical fiction coefficient, which is 0.3, and very close to what people find in granular flow, dry granular flow. And the critical volume fraction is about 0.58, 0.59, okay? So you can see things like that, but with the same data, you can go to the classical view and obtain the shear viscosity and the normal viscosity like that. And what you can see is that you can get very close to the jamming transition here, and you can see in the insets here that you can show that the divergence is really going like C minus C with a power which is minus 2. So the divergence is really in minus 2. And the nice thing is that you can go from this view to this classical view, or back and forth, whatever. The only interest of having this pressure imposed rheometer is that you can circumvent the divergence in this way and measure very closely you can really see the closely measure the jamming. Okay? So, now, this is what we found for sphere. Now, I want to show you the recent result that we got for fiber. And actually, fiber are a little bit more complicated because you have an additional length. And this is typically the different regime you have. You have the diminute regime, where the particle cannot even bump into each other, which is like that. L is the length of the fiber. You have the semi-dilute, where they start to interact. And you have a concentrated regime, which is given here. And if you go even further, you can have a transition to a pneumatic order. So I will look really here at this concentrated regime. And actually, this regime is relatively an explorer for fiber. And there have been some results showing that there are yield stress, nonlinear scaling of the shear stress with the shear rate. There's some shear thinning also. And most of the studies are done at a lower volume fraction and for an aspect ratio of the fiber, which is not very large. So what we did is that we did this volume or pressure imposed rheometry of very dense fiber. This fiber is very big. This is actually some plastic brushes that I bought in a company which is in Bologna, which is making brushes for all sorts of brushes, whatever. So you see that we have four sets of particle, and they are about a few millimeter length, okay? And I just want to notice that we have two sets which have more or less the same aspect ratio but different size. It's two and three. You can see they have different size but same aspect ratio. So when we did the experiment, the first thing we found is that there is a viscous skinning of the shear stress and the pressure, the particle pressure, and they are linear in the shear rate, like you can see here. But there is a non-zero yield stress. You can see it here. Okay. Yeah. So they were surprised about that, but it's not surprising because other people aren't seeing it. And this yield stress is increase with the volume fraction, no? And more sharply when they have a higher aspect ratio. It's still unknown, and if I have time, I will tell you my feelings about it. Now, if you subtract with the cell stress, because otherwise everything is scaling with gamma dot, you can see that the shear viscosity and the normal viscosity increase with phi and diverge as phi c, which is depending on the aspect ratio. And there's a shift toward lower value of phi with increasing a. And you can also have the effective friction, and you see that everything collapses for the effective friction, which is very nice. So actually what you can measure very closely is the critical volume fraction. And this critical volume fraction is varying with the aspect ratio. So it's decreasing with the aspect ratio. And we plotted in this graph some experiments which were done in dry fiber. And you can see some experiments. It's pretty much the same. And there is also some simulation for a spherical cylinder. It's random spherical cylinder. So you see that phi critical decrease with increasing A, but we don't know whether there is an organized structure because we cannot see anything in our system. And clearly, maybe here, if you think the comparison with the there may be an organized structure for a larger aspect ratio because it's the curve that we have, which is our curve, is a little bit higher than for the numerical simulation using random. The mu c is large and constant with A, and much larger than for the sphere. You see it's 0.40. Okay, now, good. If I scale everything using phi c, you see that all the data collapse. It's beautiful. So that means that all the jamming, it's really just the aspect ratio which is giving you the jamming. Okay? And the new thing that we were really surprised is the fact that the divergence, conversely to what you see for sphere, it's not minus 2, it's minus 1. Okay? Which is here. Okay, we can also give some constitutive law. So now, conclusion. So I think it's the message is that there is a Hill stress, but if you subtract that, you can have something which is diverging, but different from sphere. So a few messages. The rheology of dense granular suspension is really the contact interaction. It's frictional particle. There is this pressure imposed rheometry. The divergence for the sphere is minus 2. For the fiber, it's minus 1. I want to go back on the, well, of course, we don't know what is the organized microstructure in our system. I want to go back about this thing about Hill stress. People have thought that there was some adhesive force in some of the experiments that people have done in the past. That's why there will be a Hill stress. In our system, the particles are huge. So we really think that it could be something which we call transient jamming in the sense that because it's a confined system, there is very large fluctuation in transient jamming which can happen. This can give some signal, fluctuating signal in our measurement, and that's why we may have this Hill stress. And of course, we want to know what's going on in the microstructure here. There is also some work we've done on normal stress difference normal stress differences in fiber suspension, and I can tell you about it if you want. And we have done very recently some experiment on the migration, and I can tell you that the fiber are migrating toward the center of a pipe also, but it's less than for the sphere. So I think I am in time.
So that went perfectly on time. And just to make sure that everyone understands, so there's now 15 minutes available for discussion of this paper or talk, and then we'll move to the next talk. So toward the end of the discussion session, then Matthew, if you could come up. And so I have, I'm sorry, you were almost perfect. You could have had a few more seconds.
Oh,
I'm sorry. So Dan Blair, for those who don't know Dan, Dan is here. He's going to be the mic runner for the back. And so, yes, so Gary?
You need the mic.
Well, I like it if you run, but that's okay. All right.
For these very large particle fiber suspensions, does the initial preparation or condition or whatever matter to the measurements you're making?
No, because we put them, and actually, it's a steady state. They reach that steady state. They are clearly, we don't know if there is a, unfortunately, we cannot see into the cell. But you mix them, of course, you put them into a cell, and we do different type of experiments. So I don't think it matters, because they're going to reach a steady state with a certain structure, probably. But I don't know. You see, if you look at the even at very concentrated, if you look at the FEC, this graph, it's really, if you look at the green symbol, which is a simulation for the maximum random particle of spherical cylinder, you know, it's very similar, except for large aspect ratio, where the data, which are the open circle, are a little bit higher. So they reach a steady state, and that's all. So the data we have, it's mini experiment. We redid them, and we always get the same thing.
Morten?
The constant pressure experiment is a very interesting one, but I've been struggling for the last couple of years to understand it. In classical rheometry, there are two essential features. The velocity field is known, and there's uniform, and there's a free surface where the pressure is balanced against atmospheric, and that's required to evaluate the normal stress differences. Neither of these features exist here. The velocity field is clearly complex because of the presence of those side surfaces. So there has to be some driven secondary flow. And I can't find any way to balance the pressure in order to get the normal stresses.
Okay. One thing I want to say is that this pressure imposed rheometry works very well when you are extremely concentrated. It won't work for a dilute suspension because you don't have any signal. What I want to say is that what we impose is a stress on the particle phase. So we impose a stress on the particle phase, and the fluid can go in and out, but it's very concentrated. No, I don't know if I. No, we can discuss.
What is the stress scales where you start to see the thickening viscosity?
There's no thickening.
Okay, so what are the stress scales for
that? Well, not thickening in the sense of everything in the system, except maybe for the fiber where there is heel stress.
No, but for
the beginning, everything is scaling linearly with the shear rate.
But what are the stress scales? What's the number?
It's tracing with the shear rate.
How many pascals are we talking about?
What?
What's the stress scale? What's the
magnitude in
pascals?
I can dig that, but yeah.
400.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, for heel stress? Yeah.
Bob it. Hi. So, and it'd be interesting to know, you're of course wondering about structure, and I think that's particularly relevant in these denser flows. Can you actually make a local normal force measurement at the upper surface? So you're looking at the global pressure, which is assumed set by the weight of that, whatever you have on top.
What do you mean local?
So at a scale that's order of more than a grain, but small compared to the actual surface area. Because that would tell you, for instance, if you have force structure, like force chain. So, so if you keep the pressure constant, for instance, and you collide with a force chain, you'll dilate locally,
but then you'll
dilate globally because you have to push everything up
Yeah, I understand. Unfortunately, we don't have, it's a global measurement, and actually we have fluctuation. That's why I was talking about transient jamming, is because when you are confined, we may have very strong fluctuation coming from some transient jamming, but we cannot measure, unfortunately, locally.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do you want more with this?
Yeah, okay. I just want to add a comment, Babette. So with Babette, we have measured the properties of the same material in a wide gap quet and measured the local viscosity. And the velocity field were not that consistent with the measurement made with the pressure imposed rheometry, which means that, it's partly an answer to what Morton said, which means that there might be some boundary effect or something, we don't understand about non-local effect or whatever. But still, viscosity measured in the wide gap, viscosity measured here on the exact same system do not agree.
And I think what saves us is that we're working only at very concentrated system. And I think that's why the pressure, this pressure rheometer is working, because you are extremely concentrated. If you can see at typically the volume fraction we're measuring, it's above 40%.
Jay Feinberg.
Hi, since I'm not a rheologist, I have the advantage of being able to ask really stupid questions. isn't the particles with the large aspect ratios, isn't that kind of a poor person's model for a hydrogel, in a sense? In that case, you wouldn't be very surprised that you have some shear stress. It's tangled spaghettis.
The yield stress?
The yield stress, yeah.
Well, they are rigid,
yeah.
Extremely rigid. But let's be clear. If you look at dimensional analysis, if you have a system which is non-Bornean, and if there is only the hydrodynamic and contact, there is no reason to have something which is nonlinear. So you need to have an extra force. This is what we will see for the shear thickening. That means that some people have reported adhesive force, which can happen for fiber when they are small. But in our case, they are extremely big. And I didn't have time. We try to look at typically what is compared with some modeling that people with adhesive force, it doesn't work so well. So that's why I'm trying to find about some other idea about this transient jamming. Yeah.
Thibault de Vaux.
Yeah, just a question about the viscosity. You've shown that the viscosity diverges as phi to minus 2 for spheres, phi to minus 1 for cylinders or rods. So basically, you would expect to go continuously, right, from one to the other.
No. A rod is not, when it's an aspect ratio of 1, it's not a sphere. It's not a sphere or cylinder. It's just a rod. So I think shape matters. But I don't know how. This is just experimental result that we have.
So before that, do you think that that's the cut end that matters relative to that if they were smooth on the ends, it might be different?
No, I didn't mean that. I mean the shape.
Okay,
just the
you mean
shape.
That it's flat versus
spherical.
Yeah. Okay. Peter Olmsted?
You've mainly quoted steady state rheology measurements.
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine there's some very interesting kinetics, particularly at high concentration for the pressure imposed. Do you have anything interesting to say about
what do you mean,
the kinetics?
For
example, there'll be a time scale to do with the orientation and readjustment of the molecules,
okay,
and another time scale to do with the solvent coming in and out.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be related to some stick slip behavior that you may see at the beginning and go away. There could be all sorts of interesting things.
Well, we don't have any.
You haven't looked for that. You've avoided all those interesting features.
Bobo is over here. So, Bobo Chakraborty.
Just maybe a comment, but about the shape in the jamming context.
Yeah.
the number of contacts. If you have spheres, if you have ellipses, it varies continuously. But the rod and sphere connection is very discontinuous. This isostatic contact number is not a continuous function.
No, it's true that if you look at the kind of theory that you've done, Matthew, I don't know if you will talk about that. It's really the contact, the number of contacts which matter. And clearly, depending on the shape of the object, we may have different types. I agree completely with that. But, well,
I'm saying ellipses are very different from rods.
Yeah.
Wilson Poon in the back.
Hello. Would you care to speculate what would happen if your fibers become flexible?
Ah. They are not.
No, I know they're not. That's why
and we try to avoid that. If they are flexible, I will suspect that we may have some nonlinear behavior.
I mean, one of the reasons why I suggested is that you might think that flexibility would massively change your transient shear jamming.
Yeah, yeah.
I think so. That may be one way to sort out whether that is true or not.
I agree. But that will change also, I think, the behavior. I mean, it may happen that it's a nonlinear relation between the shear stress and the shear rate in that case. I agree, yeah.
Mort had another follow-up question. I can give him this one. But then is it okay if we change the...
Yeah, okay. I'm fine.
Actually, you want to go ahead and...
I was planning to ask Wilson's question a little differently. I've never seen a rigid fiber that was rigid. Did you measure the bending modulus of the fibers?
Yeah, actually we estimated the bending modulus and compare that with the we measured the elastic bending modulus, compare that with typical shear stress that we have. And we computed what they call the sperm number, which is the ratio of this two. And really, it's I will show you this little fiber. You'll see they are really very fat and very.
So a question from a confused tribologist here. So when you talk about friction coefficient, I mean, what does that have to do with the friction coefficient of the materials you're actually rubbing against each other?
It's an effective friction coefficient.
It falls out of the equation.
Yeah.
But do you think that, I mean, when you plot everything on a universal curve, are these all the same materials of all of these spherical particles that are being
actually,
used in
those experiments? For the spherical particle, we did two experiments, one with PMMA and the other with polystyrene, and we found more or less the same thing. But that may, there may be a little bit of change with that. Yeah.
But one thing is different is that the critical volume fraction may differ,
exactly.
That's depending on the microscopic friction.
Yeah.
So the bulk friction is the shear stress to the normal stress response of the material.
But on the local level, these are going to have different friction coefficients.
They should have
different.
And your hairbrushes are going to have different friction coefficients.
But that impacts on that critical volume as well.
Yeah. And actually, we have been doing some experiment with Franco Tapia and Olivier, where we roughen the particle to change the friction coefficient, and we'll see what will happen.
Time for one last question.
Hi, I was wondering about, I'm not so familiar with this friction load in particles. How much are these critical volume fractions real volume fractions, or they are calibrated by another method? I mean, are you confident in this 55%, 59% divergence, or can that be understood?
No, I think it could be, I'm confident that it's 58, 59. There is a 1% error bar, I'm sure, in this, for this particular sphere that we have. Of course, if we have a different set, like Jeff said, if you have a different material, it may...
But there's no static contact at these volume fractions. So if you don't have an external shear, everything will diffuse.
Okay, well, for that tour through from Einstein-level dilute suspensions up to the very dense limit, I think we should thank Elizabeth. And also for making us all look good on the timing at the beginning.